Deal. All right, welcome to the summer session of medical ethics. God willing, barring any complications or unexpected cancellations, we'll be together for 2 months for 8 new medical ethics shiurim. I hope perhaps the last one, which is closer to the 3 weeks in Tisha B'Av time, to perhaps do a particular one, which is in Yonah Dioma and about medical halacha, talking about medical issues and fasting, whether they be for pregnancy or people who are otherwise ill or have medical conditions. So I hope that'll be the last one. But the first seven will be topics similar, of course not identical, but similar to the ones that we did last semester. And if there's some new faces, we welcome you. And I recognize plenty of familiar faces. And it's good to see you back for a second semester. I wanted to begin this summer zman of learning discussing the topic which I call high-risk medical procedures. What do I mean by that? What will be the dilemma that we'll be discussing? So let me give you a common, not unique, there could be other examples, but let me give you a common, somewhat common scenario which would illustrate the dilemma, ethical and halachic, that we'll be discussing today. Imagine that there's an elder patriarch of family. He's 90 plus years old. I think we can all agree that after you've hit 90, I'm not insulting anyone by calling them older. So I'm always very nervous about age, but I think 90 is a safe age. And if I'm wrong, then I'll have to adjust it the next time I teach. So 90 plus years, someone who's lived Kanainahara, a very full life, and someone who is now suffering from what seems to be his final illness. Doctors have tried, and they've poked, and they've prodded, and it's been uncomfortable and inconvenient, but they were hoping for success. Fortunately, the doctors call the family together, and they tell this elder patriarch, unfortunately, in terms of a basic protocol and a mainstream procedure, there doesn't seem to be anything left. We're sorry, we did our best. You know, we expect that we could do something for the pain, but probably have, 6 to 9 months. It's our best bet. Of course, this is disappointing news for everyone, and the children and grandchildren are particularly crushed. Then, subsequently, they discover, because, the children are often the last ones to want to let go, on the internet, that if you'll go to Jenemsveld, there's a certain procedure that's not yet approved by the mainstream medical profession, but perhaps this could be the salvation, this could save Saba Rabba Elter Zaidi's life. So they bring it to the attention of their doctors. Doctors say, yeah, of course, we're familiar with this, but it's very, very high risk. And the reason we didn't mention it is because in your grandfather's condition, there is a very strong chance that he wouldn't even survive the procedure. But could it save him? Could it cure him? It could, but it could also kill him. Variations of the scenario that I just described are very, very common. I gave you a less tragic one with an older person, but these things happen with young people, Rahman al-Islam, as well, especially people who have been fighting cancer. And often you get to a point where the doctors simply don't have anything else to do, except for one thing, maybe, but the procedure itself, given the condition, could kill the person. And the dilemma is obvious. Do you risk whatever time you seem to have left? I gave you an imaginary scenario of 6 months. So we would all love more than 6 months, but 6 months isn't nothing. That's time to spend with family, that's time to daven, that's time to do mitzvos, that's time to hug your children, it's time to tell them you love them, it's time to put your affairs in order. Do you risk that for the fact that it could be you wheel yourself into operating room, you'll never come out. But if it will work, who knows? It could be a few more years. Who knows how many more years? Imagine we're dealing with a younger person. Maybe we could cure the disease and they could have tens of years left. Or they could die kimat on the table. So in families, in the quote real world, this is often very, not only emotional, but often divisive. It is more common than not that different members of the family have very different views about what should be done. So that is an obvious caveat. How to negotiate this in the quote real world is a separate issue. But before, as halachic Jews, before we can then discuss the emotions and the desires of the particular family members, course, our first, most basic question should be, halakhically, is it allowed? Is a person allowed to risk their life with something that's so risky that even the doctors are telling them we can't recommend it necessarily? You might die on the table. Is a person allowed to go through such a procedure? That's more or less the question that I want to discuss with you today. I think it's a very, not only relevant, but powerful and really fascinating question. Yeah.
Within this question, are we also including the fact that this person's quality of life is so bad?
I do hope to get to it later. There's one section of the shiur towards the end, I hope we'll have time to get to it, where I have it as a separate section, but you could clearly incorporate it, and that is, let's say it wasn't a situation of a terminal disease, but let's say someone was in a situation of chronic pain, and there's a very risky procedure which could be done, not to save the person's life, the person may not be dying in the case that I'm going to talk about, but to alleviate pain. Are you allowed to risk your life, not to save your life, but to alleviate pain? But certainly, depending on how we would answer that, the value of pain and living without it or with it should be part of the chulent of this question, no question about it. So let's start by doing a quick review of some basic concepts from the Torah and from the Gemara, which we've already seen. Again, for those of you, we'll repeat them for the shlemus of the topic, and for those who may not have been here in the previous shiurim. But in the spring semester, we discussed a little bit the Torah and halachic perspective on risk taking. And we have to review that, because obviously that's relevant to a shiur that's entitled High Risk Medical Procedures. So take a look at the opening of your sheet. We have on the top of the page the psukim, in Devarim and Perek Dalet. Again, we've seen them, but to review, two psukim that are quoted in the Gemaras that seem to be very clear. Torah tells us, Raki shamar lecho, shmar nashrecha mi'od, and then again, unishmartem me'od, anafsho seichem. A person is supposed to be very careful about his or her health. And there's a number of Gemaras that illustrate this concept. For example, the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Lamed Beis, we saw this in a previous shiur about the chassid. This is a chassid with a lowercase c. But the chassid who was very into his davening, and he stopped by the side of the road because, you know, the sun was setting and he's davening mincha. And of course, the general, the Roman general, walks by and says Shalom Aleichem to him. And he doesn't respond because he's in the shtil of Shemon Esrei. He's sitting saying Shemon Esrei. And then, of course, the person could have kept on going, or he could have killed him. He chose the third option. He waited. When the person finished the Shemoneh Esrei, the general asks him, how could you do such a thing? Just paraphrasing the part where it's underlined. He says, "You know, don't you know you're risking your life?" And again, the way the Gemara kind of superimposes into the non-Jewish general's mouth, don't you know the pasuk? Raki shamar lecha, shmor nafshecha, etc. After all, I gave you shalom. Lama lo hachzarta li shalom? Why didn't you respond to me? And he continues, Im ha'iti yochotech roshcha b'sayif. If I would kill you right here and now, chop your head off, would anyone have a complaint against me? Would anyone have a taina? Meaning, obviously, you did something, you disrespected, general, you knew you were risking your life. How could you do such a thing? Doesn't that violate? So the Gemara continues, and, you know, of course, you know, a Jew always has an excuse, always has a story. And he was able to talk his way out of the trouble. But that's a detail. The larger point the Gemara seems to be saying is you're not supposed to. So in that case, the person had a cheshbon that it wasn't as dangerous as it appeared. But in general, we see clearly from this Gemara, you're not supposed to put yourself in risk. Furthermore, a Gemara in Shabbos, which I don't think we saw previously, source number 3, Shabbos, Lamed Beis, Amud Aleph, the Gemara talks about how you're not supposed to stand in a certain place. And how Rav Yanai taught in the general situation, speaking generally, Le'olam al yamod adam b'makom sakana. Lomar she'osin lo nes. The Gemara says, you know, you shouldn't walk across a very rickety bridge. You shouldn't walk into a place which is like a condemned, abandoned building. Also, you could extrapolate to all sorts of modern scenarios of things which are highly, highly risky behavior. And the Gemara says, you shouldn't do something in which pretty much the only way you would survive if God did a miracle for you. You say, God's going to do a miracle for me. So this is the Gemara. This is the source for the oft-quoted concept. Ein somchen al anes. This is the Gemara, source number 3. A person's not allowed to do something in which al derech hateva, naturally, they're risking themselves. Of course, God can do a nes anywhere. He pulled Yosef out of the pit. He pulled Avram out of the fiery furnace. He pulled us out of Yam Suf. Hashem can do anything to anyone, obviously. But you don't put yourself in situations which would require such an act of divine kindness and heroism to save you. That's the basic background. that creates the potential problem. Now, before we get to anything medical, we do have to have a little bit more of a sophisticated discussion. Because after all, as I mentioned in a previous year, what constitutes as danger? I mean, I gave you some extreme examples because the Gemara was discussing extreme examples. But most of life is not so black and white. Most of life is not so extreme. Right? For all of human history, especially now that we have things called cars and planes and the like, but all sorts of things which could be dangerous, and yet they've become part of our everyday life. How do we navigate that from a halachic perspective, given the fact that we were just told, don't do things which put your life in danger? So here we have, again, another famous concept, which again we just have to put on the table to review, which again we have seen in previous weeks, which is source number 4. The Gemara in Shabbos, which tells us the famous concept that when you have something, didoshu bei rabim, I'm reading the underlined part of source number 4, if you have something which many people are doing, doshu means like trampling on, meaning people do without thinking, it's just a course of normal life. Doshu bei rabim, someone? Not going there. Kevah deDoshu beRabim, says the Gemara, quoting the pasuk in Tehillim, Shomer Pesayim Hashem. God protects the foolish. Oh. Now, again, in general, I don't know too many people who would volunteer to be called fools by David HaMelech or by the Marshal. But if you're willing to be called a fool in certain circumstances, in essence, the Gemara says, even if you're doing something which is on some level objectively a little foolish because it does involve a certain danger, says the Gemara, it is permitted if it is something which is, quote, Doshu Bei Rabim. And we explained that previously based on the poskim, that what that means is, and this is important, it's subject to time and place. What was dangerous 100 years ago is not dangerous anymore, and what's dangerous now won't be dangerous in 10 years because the speed of technological advance increases. But given whatever time and place you find yourself in, you're not supposed to do things which are perceived as very risky or very dangerous. But if in your time and place, this is something that people do as a matter of course, this is considered a pretty regular thing to do. If you were to tell your best friend that tomorrow I'm doing X, you wouldn't go, ah! So, okay. I gave that as an example last year, correct? So that's an example. So even though, yes, statistically, as I said, you could go to an actuary, you could go to the insurance company, and they'll be able to tell you, yes, over the course of the year, X number of people will be seriously injured or Rahman al-Islam worse doing this behavior. But nevertheless, despite the fact, we're not denying that there is that risk. But the bottom line is, in your time and place, this is a risk that has become acceptable. The Gemara endorses this concept of acceptable risk. Again, if we wouldn't have this Gemara, you wouldn't be able to get into a car ever. You wouldn't be able to go on a plane ever. You wouldn't be able to do almost anything. Sorry? Yeah, Kima, exactly, yeah. Now, again, I'm not discussing every... You can always find scenarios which are probably over the line. I can't... We can't discuss every scenario now, but as we're right... The first part of today's show is the building blocks. Once we have the building blocks, then we can discuss the razzle-dazzle medical question. But the building blocks. So on the one hand, we have building block number one, we're not supposed to do risky things. Number two, we have a big carve-out, a big exemption. That is to say, things which are considered normal in the course of the regular goings-on of life in your time and place, things which are considered acceptable. Now, with that in mind, let's take a look at a fascinating, brief quote from a Gemara in source number 5. And this is all new. Even if you were with me last semester, from here forward is all new. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia, and Daf Kuf Yud Bet Amud Aleph, quoting a pasuk in Devarim Chav Dalid, again, not the idea of Shomer Pesayim Hashem, that's not the quote, although as we'll see, perhaps it's related. But the Gemara says, based on this idea, if Neima Ola Zeh Bekevesh V'Natla Be'ilan U'Masra Atmo L'Misa Lo Al Scharo. The Gemara is asking the rhetorical point, because presumably it is allowed. But the Gemara says, is it not from the basis of this pasuk that what is allowed? The example the Gemara gives is someone who climbs up like on a ladder and goes up on a very high tree and is kind of hanging off the tree to grab the fruit or to grab whatever is necessary. Why is this allowed? Why is the person doing it? Because that's their job. And the Gemara seems to be carving out here another exemption. Although the question is this an entirely new idea, or is this related to the Shomer Psayim Hashem? We'll have to see that in a second. The Gemara here seems to be saying, and again, we don't know if there are any limits yet, the Gemara here seems to be saying there's a whole new category called Parnasa. You see, we value people who work for a living. We value the risks that people are willing to take in order to earn a living. And the Gemara says that there's a difference between, and then that's why I gave examples in previous weeks, if someone called that before, recreational, high-risk things, like I said, jumping off a bridge or something crazy like that. There's a difference between the risk involved in something recreational and when it's being done as part of someone who's pursuing a livelihood. By which I mean to say, let's say, naniach, let's assume, for argument's sake, that the statistical danger of a person bungee jumping was the same as them being some kind of a fisherman on the high seas. Or think of a different example. Gives a date.
A fireman.
A policeman. A soldier. A soldier. An officer in the army. Come up with everything. The point is only, again, have to think analytically here. The point from this Gemara is that the same risk what might be prohibited when it's just being done as a thrill-seeking, just for a recreation, but when it's being done in the pursuit of a person's parnasa, the halacha allows a person to take certain risks in pursuit of a parnasa that would not necessarily be allowed otherwise. Now, does that mean everything is permissible? We don't know. We just read one line in a Gemara. But we have a new idea now, a new brick to build with, which opens up our eyes to something more expansive. Now, we're not talking about something that necessarily everyone does. This may be the kind of thing that, you know, when you go to shul on Shabbos, and after davening at the Kiddush, someone says, "Nu, what's going on?" He says, "Oh, I got a new job. I was out of work for 6 months. You know, parnasa was hard, but now I got this new job." The people may go, "Oh, that's dangerous." We're not saying that no one thinks twice about it like driving a car. Maybe they do feel it's dangerous. Maybe in your time and place. And yet, for the sake of a parnasa, it may in fact be allowed. So the question is, of course, how to understand this. What principle is being enunciated here that we can try to tease out to see something broader? Because again, eventually we want to get back to our medical ethics question. So this was addressed, I think, three important building blocks before we get to the specific medical question are addressed in three tshuvas. Two from earlier generations, and one from our own generation very recently. That's sources 6, 7, and 8. Let's start with source number 6, a tshuva of the Noda B'Yehuda. Now this tshuva you have here, source number 6, is a landmark tshuva, one of the most famous responses written by the Noda B'Yehuda, but not for the paragraph that we're going to be reading. The topic that the Noda B'Yehuda discusses here, which is very famous, is whether a Jew is allowed to hunt. Whether hunting is something for a nice Jewish boy. He doesn't even consider the possibility it would be for a nice Jewish girl. That's obviously, in his opinion, not even a question. But he wants to know, for a nice Jewish boy, should a nice Jewish boy go hunting? So the Gemara... he's discussing hunting. Any issue you can think about. Is this appropriate for a Jew or not? In the course of this discussion, which is not our topic today, in the course of this discussion, the Noda B'Yehuda introduces a chiluk, a distinction. It says, why is the person hunting? Are they hunting for sport? Or because they're a pilgrim and this is how you have to eat? Where you
can't eat it.
Maybe he'll sell it. Maybe he'll trap it and then shecht it. So says the Noda B'Yehuda, look at this, number 6, Umeata. Eich yachnis atzmo ish Yehudi lamokum gidude chayos ros. We're not talking about going to the zoo. We're talking about going into the wild jungle where you might not come out. The act of hunting is dangerous, and we're not talking about because you might shoot yourself. He's talking about because the animals might rip you apart. That's what he's talking about. Now, it's true that you might shoot yourself if you don't know what you're doing.
Or a friend.
Or a vice president. All sorts of things can happen. So he continues, and he says, it depends. Mi shehu ani va'osu zel l'michyoso l'zeh tori hitira kamo sochre yamim me'ever li'yam shekamashu l'tzarech michyoso parnaso Ein Breira, says in Rabbi Yehuda. If this is the way the person's making a living, either he'll figure out a heter way to eat the food he traps and kills, or he'll then sell the skins, sell the meat, whatever. So then says the Rabbi Yehuda, the Torah, again, he doesn't give any caveats. I'm not saying we couldn't ourselves, but he just says, the Torah, the halacha, does not stand in the way of a person making a parnasa. How do we know this? He quotes the Gemara that we just saw, Bab Metzia, about the guy hanging upside down from the tree. Avali says on the next line, Misha ain't ikra kavanasa l'mchiyoso. He's just doing this, umitavas libo hu holecha mokam gedu dechayos. He's just doing this for sport. Machnis asma besakana, hareza over al v'nishmartem me'od. So says in Arbuta, hunting for sport, if you're going on in the wild jungle, is considered, if you assume that there's a real risk. Now, I'm not going to, if I wanted to know if it's risky or not, I wouldn't call the Rebbe Yehuda. I wouldn't even call the chief rabbi. You have to call someone who knows. But if you go on one of these, you know, $8,000 a person safaris in South Africa, there's obviously some level of risk. But I don't think it's probably the risk that the Rebbe Yehuda was describing, right? Okay, yeah. Nebuch, just last week, people died on Mount Everest. A whole group of people died, Nebuch. So, whether or not, again, we don't want to go far afield now and try to figure out how we're going to apply this to hunting or things nowadays. But again, if we have a metzius, a reality, which is very, very dangerous, which is the Nor Yehuda stipulating, in his case, was the case of hunting, still he says, it's permitted. Why? Because the Torah is not going to stand in the way of earning a living. And that's how he understands the Gemara, not connected to Shomer Pesayim. He doesn't even say that earning a living is a mitzvah. I'm not saying he would disagree with that, but he doesn't say that. He just says, as a matter of fact, and this stands alone, that in order to make a living, a person is more or less, assuming that you don't assume that anything else is usur, but the risk itself, risks are allowed to be taken, even if it's in pursuit of earning a living. Yes?
So could we say something?
Maybe, yes. Maybe. Now again, if someone would come to me as a rabbi and say, you know, this is what I want to do, am I allowed? So I might talk to him about other alternatives, perhaps being a librarian, you know, or something really thrilling which might scratch his itch like that. But the answer is, but let's say a person said to me, this could get way too far afield, but if a person said to me, yeah, I thought about this a lot, and this is the way Hashem made me. I was born to be a skydiving teacher. This is where I chiyus, and this is where I feel fulfilled, and I make a living. Yeah, it may very well be permitted. Certainly, I could say this unquestionably. It certainly is a different question than the person who's just doing it because, hey, I turned 80, so if I die, what the heck? I lived a nice life anyway. Which pretty much what happened. Just happened just last week. A woman was 80. She said, what the heck? I might as well say, and sure enough, her chute didn't open. No, because she was able to grab on to her instructor, who was able to open it. So it was a mirror. But she landed with a thud. She landed with a thud. Okay? So that's different than a person who's going to earn a living. That's the point. Yes? Yes, fair enough.
Every time the risk has to be taken into account.
Correct. My point only is that there is a risk-reward scale. And the reward of a thrill on a Sunday afternoon, I guess in Israel a Friday, would permit a lot less of a risk than someone who is doing this for his living. Okay? Now, let's take a look at source number 7. This is a more recent tshuva of Rav Avadya Yosef. So Rav Avadya quotes a tshuva sefer whose author I'm not familiar with, called the Zecher Yehosef, who tries to put this all together. And he says, you know what Shomer Pesayim Hashem means? You know what things we allow people to take risks for? Hani midi dehave mishum mitzvah. If what you're doing is a mitzvah, then you're allowed to take certain risks. Now, I don't know the whole tshuva, because I only know the part that Rav Avadya quoted. But Rav Avadya raises the obvious objection. He says, that cannot be all. Because we have Gemaras which seem to apply the allowance of risk-taking for things which, no matter how generous you want to be, can't really be called a mitzvah. For example, He said some of the things that we have seen. We saw people traipsing places and getting slightly wounded, or other examples. And says Rav Avadya, therefore, if you look at Rashi, we get a different sense. You get a different sense. Rashi says, what does this mean when we say people do things? Not that it's a mitzvah. Rather, if you look at the third line, Hurgalubo mipnei dochkan. People are familiar with this. And why are they familiar? Why do people do this? Why has it become so familiar? Certain exigent circumstances. There's certain pressing needs. So, it's not 100% clear what Rashi means. But what Rav Avadya explains, where I have it underlined on the last part of source number 7, Alma, what do you see from Rashi? Whenever there's a legitimate pressure, a need to do something, Hachanami, therefore, in general, he says, b'makom tzorech. So again, this relates to the point we said. If it's just because I have nothing else to do on a Sunday, not necessarily called a tzorech. Now, you could still say, maybe it's not so risky. I'm saying, if something is risky, so then, Rav Avadya says, you don't need it to be a mitzvah, is not the only reason that it would be allowed. Even just being a tzorech, even just being a legitimate need. Now again, you say potato, I say potato. What counts as a need? Okay, that's always going to be quibbled over. But this is a concept which I think is an important one. So why are you allowed to risk your life, for example, let's say to earn a living? So you could either say because earning a living is a mitzvah, which it is, or you could say whether it's a mitzvah or not. It's certainly a tzorech. It's certainly a tzorech. So that either one of these might explain that. But there's a third concept in source number 8, and then once we get this down, we'll be perfectly set to spend the second half of this year focusing in particularly on the medical issue, and that is another principle raised by the Binyan Sion in source number 8. The Binyan Sion is written by Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, one of the great German Gedolim. I say he was a German Gedol because he lived in Germany, but he was a Gedol for the whole world, not just for Germany. People in Litta and other places asked him Shilas as well, but he's certainly from the tradition of a German Jewry, both geographically and hashkafically. And he is also bothered by this. How come we seem to have so many allowances, yet it's a pasuk in Chumash, it's a Gemara, that you're not supposed to do risky things? So he gives us an example of the following. What sets him off is the following question. You're familiar with the concept of Birkat HaGomel. Escape a certain dangerous proposition. We thank Hashem. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, like having a Karbon Toda, we make a Birkat HaGomel. So the Gemara has four broad categories. Now, they don't all correspond to everything that happens in modern life. So poskim have to figure out in modern life how to correspond what happens in our lives to what the Gemara was talking about. The Gemara gives four broad categories, and one of the things that the Gemara says is someone who takes a sea journey. Right? If you got on Columbus's boat and you were lucky enough to get off in the New World, you'd make a Birkas HaGomel, because the odds of crossing the sea, or even not crossing, just getting halfway, were certainly very, very risky. Again, to your point, what was risky in the 15th century is not the same thing that's risky in the 20th or 21st century. But that, broadly speaking, going on, and that's a question. Someone goes on a cruise in 2012, do they make it a Birkas HaGomel when they get off the cruise? That's a good shaila. That's a real shaila. Yes, it's a shaila about airplane travel. If you fly from, let's say, the United States, or for that matter, from Europe to Eretz Yisrael, you will see, certainly I see this in the yeshivas, some of the boys go up to make Birkas HaGomel, and some of them don't. That's a question. How do you apply that to modern standards? But one of the examples, so let's leave aside modern, or let's leave it even aside Rav Yaakov Ellinger's Zman. He's trying to get himself into the head of the Gemara, into the Mishnah. So the Gemara and the Mishnah are saying, if you do this really, really risky thing and Hashem saves you, thank Hashem. In fact, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, an obvious question. Why are we talking about making a bracha after you've just risked your life? Have a better thing. Don't go. Who told you to go on the sea voyage? Say, so if King Ferdinand kicks you out of Spain, so you have no choice. But that's what's called a tzorech. But in general, who told you to go on the sea voyage? So look what he says. So you could, based on what we thought, we've seen until now, you might have answered, well, maybe you have a good reason to go. Or maybe it's a mitzvah that you're going for. He doesn't give either of those answers. He gives a new answer, which is also an important principle. He says, we have to distinguish between the following. Look at where I have it underlined. Davka b'yesh vadai sakanat nefesh lifaneinu. As opposed to b'shata ein kan pikoch nefesh rak sheyesh lochush, maybe b'sakana haba b'zaz linan basarua. When are we so strict that we say you don't get a chance? You know, you can't play the odds. And if there's a 40% chance of risk, you don't get to say, well, I'm going to trust the 60%. And where do we say, no, usher, don't do things that involve risk? That's when the risk is immediate. If you'll do this, right away you'll be putting yourself in that sakana. So then, we might have other ways out, but that's the parsha called danger avoid. But says the Binyan Sion, if you're talking about starting a process which may at a future point become dangerous, and the question is now, are you allowed to get on, right? When you want to get on the highway, until the exit ramp comes, you're stuck. You get on the boat. So when you pull away from the harbor in the, help me, London, or wherever you pull away from, or Haifa, I'm still back on the Columbus. Anyway, yeah. From Haifa, right? It's not so dangerous right there. Right, it's not so dangerous. Yes, it's true. If you add up the 2 months it took to go from here to the New World or wherever, in the process, yes, it's inevitable there will be dangerous moments. Hopefully you'll survive, but you'll be taking a risk. But when you begin the process, it's not necessarily dangerous. We're talking about a danger that's haba'aleinu. Not Matova, but Balin in the future. So says the Binyan Sion, that doesn't mean it's automatically mutter. But he says that's a different shaila than when you're walking into the Kor HaBarzel, so when you're walking into the fiery furnace. Yeah. Very fat, very sharp, very subtle, but very sharp. So he says there's a difference. A process which will lead to danger, you can't necessarily do that, but he implies that there you can play the odds much more liberally. But if you're talking about a situation in which whatever the danger is, maybe the danger is only 20%, but if it's immediate, so then, in his opinion, all things being equal, that's more restrictive. So, just to summarize, what we've seen until now is that the default position is l'chaim. Choose life. We try to do things which not only don't risk, but hopefully even promote healthy living and good health. We certainly don't want to risk our life. That's the default position, and it's not just a preference. It's not just the latest fad of a mayor or a first lady. This is a halacha. This is a halacha. However, we also know that people are allowed to live normal lives. So how do we square square that round peg? The answer is a few things. Number one, we have to take into account what's considered normal. And normal does change from time to place. That's called Shomer Pesayim Hashem. Number two, there's a carve-out particular for earning a living. Now, that may be just a variation of Shomer Pesayim Hashem, or it may be its own concept, because it's a mitzvah to earn a living, because it's an important tzorech to earn a living, or maybe because, to use the traditional example they were giving, which was these, you know, sea merchants and the like, because the danger wasn't necessarily immediate. It was inevitable, perhaps, but it wasn't immediate. Whatever the reason is, we have some of these carve-outs which allow us to kind of balance and negotiate. Not everything will be allowed, not everything will be prohibited. There has to be a surmount. I think I told you, was it last week, right? I said a posek who's always machmir is just as bad as a posek who's always mekil. Neither of them should be your posek. Yeah, anyone who has any integrity is inevitably going to have to make distinctions, and sometimes yes and sometimes no. So that's a metaphor for halachic life. That's basically where we are as a background. So now we can get back to our Elter Elta Zedi, our Saba Rabba. We want to know, the doctors say, well, maybe there is this chance we could get you cured, but you're risking everything. You're risking something long-term for something short-term. How do we negotiate everything we've seen to try to understand that idea? Yes. Yeah, that too. Yes. Okay, sorry, I misspoke. Yes. So when we speak about medicine, an important word of introduction, which is not as true as it used to be, but there is still an echo of truth to that. That is the statement, somewhat ominous, but the statement of the Ramban in source number 9. The Ramban just points out something which, again, in his time and until very recently was very true. Baruch Hashem, we live in a generation where it's less true. And that is, says the Ramban, that all of this has to be looked at in a completely different way when we're asking a question about medicine. Why? Because, says the Ramban, Ein lecha berefuos ela sakana. The whole nature of medicine is one big danger. Masha marpe lezeh, meimis lezeh. The same procedure which kills Yenim will save Plony. Will kill Jack and save Jane. So the whole, now again, Baruch Hashem, we live in a time where that's not nearly as true as it was in his day. right? This is, you know, before, you know, all of the great advances in terms of bacteria, et cetera. But it used to be, until relatively recent in human history, that the doctors killed as many people as they saved. I think I mentioned to you that the Arma Farshim will say that's why there are certain statements in Chazal which are very negative about doctors. Not because they're trying to hurt people. Yes, yes, yes. I don't want to say it. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Yes, but yes, exactly what I was thinking of. You're correct. You're correct. So there's different explanations for that statement. But one of the explanations is inevitably Bashogeg. But still, doctors, the whole nature of medicine is very dangerous. So even though Baruch Hashem, we can dial that back a lot, what was in very strong black and white is a lot more in a dull gray in our generation. But it's still true. Just ask any, whenever you leave, you know, the doctor will not let you leave that office until he tells you that there's a risk, right? Every doctor makes sure to tell you that.
I mean, something as
simple as penicillin,
someone who's allergic to it.
Yes, yes. So the point is just simply, this doesn't answer any questions for us. This is just another thing for us to throw into the pot, which is that whatever we're going to say in general is not necessarily directly applicable to medicine, because medicine by nature involves a certain risk or danger, and we start with a axiomatic assumption that people are supposed to be treated. Whether that's a mitzvah or not, whether it's ideal, l'chachila, so you have to go back to the videotape, it's online, yutorah.org, we did that 6 weeks ago or 7 weeks ago, but the bottom line is everyone, including the Ramban, who was the one who, yachasit, relatively, had the most apprehension about medicine, but even he admits at the end of the day, the Torah sanctions it. Whether it's ideal, not ideal, but the Torah sanctions medicine, and medicine by definition involves risks. 1 + 1 = 2, says the Ramban. You can't immediately obviously apply the categories of risk which we're used to directly to medicine. But okay, that doesn't answer any questions. It's just an important thing to keep in the back of our mind. But wouldn't you know it, an almost identical question comes up to our risk question, comes up in, of all places, a story in Malachim Bet. I'm not the Tanakh slot here, but it's all Torah. The Tanakh here describes a siege. It was Ashur, if I'm not mistaken, had a siege at that time around Yerushalayim, around the Jewish camp. And as you know, with a siege, food is scarce, medicine is scarce, and that's not good for anybody, even if you're healthy. If you're a leper and already in a precarious medical situation, so the siege is doubly, triply, quadruply risky. So the Navi describes how these four Mitzorim, these four lepers, basically were schmoozing with each other, and they basically said to each other, what are we going to do? Just wait to see what happens? Ma anachnu yoshvim po ad... We're just going to die. If they won't attack. They'll let us. Good. But everyone else can survive another few months or whatever, a few weeks. We have a few days left. We're going to die. So instead of sitting here waiting around doing nothing, instead of starving to death or being sick and whatever the case was, they say in the next pasuk, "Lachu v'nafla el machane aram." Right? Let's sneak into the enemy encampment. Let's sneak in. Hopefully, we'll find the medicine. We'll find the food that we need. Halavai, yes. And if not, they were aware of the risk. And if not, they'll kill us. Because they understood this wasn't a suicide mission. Suicide mission means there's no chance. But this was clearly meets the threshold of high risk. But it was also high reward. High risk, high reward. And that, sure enough, in this particular case, it ended miraculously because when they got there, Hashem made a miracle and there was nobody there. Says the Gemara in source number 11, virtually exactly the Shiloh we raised. But in order to get to that, the Gemara is discussing something else. What is the Gemara discussing? Something which has to be not just politically correct, we have to be accurate. The Gemara is discussing whether a Jew is allowed to go to a non-Jewish doctor. So why not? Okay, because my bubby said that my anical, he's the best doctor. No, not Jewish pride, and not even chauvinism. Very simple. In the ancient pagan world that they lived in, there was a good chance if you went to the non-Jewish doctor, he would use the opportunity to kill you. No one is saying that's true anymore, I guess, except for if you go to certain areas of the world. But certainly no one would say this in the Western world. But in the time of the Gemara, they took this as a very real threat. So the Gemara says somebody who is in a serious mental condition, but safek chai, safek meis, they're not necessarily in a mortal condition, but it's a serious condition. Ein mistrapin man. They're not allowed to increase their risk by going to the non-Jewish doctor. But varai meis, but someone who's definitely going to die, that's clear, and there's no Jewish doctor who can help him or her, then they can go. That's the statement. Now the Gemara wants to analyze the statement. Who said you're allowed to go just because your life is clearly at risk? I'm on the bottom of the page, number 11. Ha'ika chayesha. This is an important phrase. I'll use the board. I'm good. No need for Michlala's help. Okay. Landers has invested. We appreciate Michlala's contribution. Well, Machon Lander has stepped up to the plate as a premier educational institution. Doesn't have the history of Michlala, but okay, we're just starting. So the Gemara introduces two phrases, important to know. Chaye Sha'a, can everyone see this? Maybe I do need Michlala. Chaye Olam. These are the two phrases that the Gemara is contrasting. Chaye Sha'a, as you'll see in a moment, doesn't mean temporary or permanent, because ain't nobody living permanently. So what does that mean? Chai Shah means, we'll have to give a more halachic definition actually towards the end of this year, so I don't want to overstate what I want to say now. But basically it means the clock is ticking and you're aware of the clock. I mean, the clock is always ticking, but you're aware of it. Now, we don't know from the Gemara if that means you have 6 months to live, or 12 months, or 3 years. We don't know. It could be two, or 2 weeks. Chai Shah means there's a short, defined period of time that you have left. Chai Olam does not mean you live forever, because no one does. It means normal life expectancy. Maybe. Yeah, again, someone in a terminal condition may have 6 months. It may even a year and a half left. But the clock is ticking and they're aware of it. It's not like, you know, of course, 1 minute here, the next minute in the ground. Of course, Hashem knows any one of us, Chas V'Shalom, might only have a week left or less. But this is not discussed. That's not called Chai Shah. You make yourself crazy. Yeah, so Chai Shah means that the person themselves is aware that they're on borrowed time. And Chai Olam means they have every expectation of living what is, quote, a normal life. Which, of course, Baruch Hashem, depends on when and where you live. And we're living in a generation in which it's far greater than it's ever been. Okay. So the Gemara asks, who said, yes, the person is dying. So, but they have Chai Shah. No one's saying he's going to die today. The person's dying. Let's just make up a time. He has a week left. You're telling me you can go to the non-Jewish doctor. Non-Jewish doctor might stab him in the heart today. So he's risking his Chaye Shah. Who gave you a right to risk your Chaye Shah? That's the Gemara's question. The Gemara answers at the end of the first line, L'Chaye Shah Lo Chayshinan, which does not mean we don't care about it. We care about every second of life. But it means Yachasit, relatively, if we have to risk Chaye Shah for a chance, for a bite at the apple of Chai Olam, you're allowed to take that. We don't say, don't go for the procedure, don't go to the non-Jewish doctor who could restore your Chai Olam, who could cure you, because you might be risking your Chai Shah, your 3 weeks or your 3 days or whatever. The Chai Shah, lo chashinan. The Gemara says, well, how do you know that? The Gemara says, we know that from the story of the four lepers. They weren't dying that second. They had some time left, maybe a few days left. And they risked the chai. Of course, if they had gotten caught by the enemy, they would have been killed that moment. And yet the Gemara assumes that what they did was considered legitimate. Sometimes you have stories in Tanakh which we don't learn from. We learn the opposite. But the Gemara makes an assumption that what they did was halachically correct. And just like the lepers risked their chai shah for a chance at chai olam, they risked whatever short time they had left for a chance to be cured, or at least buy themselves more lengthy life. So too, says the Gemara, in the case of the doctor, you're allowed to risk, yes, it's true, you might not walk out of that doctor's office alive. But if the reason you're doing that is to gain Chai Olam, to get cured, you're allowed to do that. Now that's, again, not exactly our case, but the echoes, the implications are pretty clear. And in fact, many poskim draw this conclusion from the Gemara. Take a look at source number 12. This is perhaps the oldest and most well-known tshuva, the Shvus Yaakov, or Yaakov Reischer. He says, again, we'll just read the basic case, Chola Echad, source number 12, Shechola Eschelyo, Shekarav Lamus. He's very close to death. Chola Rofim Omdim Shevada Yamus Toch Yomo Yomayim. In his case, the doctors are saying you have a day or two to live. But they say, Yesh Od Refuah Achas, there's one thing we could still do. Ev Shesh Yisrape, you could even be healed mechelio. On the other hand, efshar lehepech, could be just the opposite. Im yikach refu azu, im eino tatzliach, chas v'sholam yomus miyad, tosha oshtayim. So well, the more things change, the more they stay the same. So exactly what medical technique he's discussed a few years ago, I don't know. But it could be the same thing happening in Hadassah or Shaar Tzedek right now. What do you do? Is a person allowed to have such a procedure? Imuter lasos refu azu? Or maybe not. Chashina l'chayisha b'sheva taz adif. Maybe you have to say, daven, take medicine, do the normal things, but don't do something that's so risky. And the bottom line of his answer, very simply, is this is the Gemara that we just saw. This is the story in the Tanakh. He adds 1 plus 1 equals 2. Again, it's not such a chiddush, because once you're aware of the story in the Tanakh and the Gemara, it doesn't take such an imagination to apply it. And he says, Mali, a non-Jewish doctor, Mali, a high-risk procedure. It's the same issue. You're doing something, again, that's why it's always important in halach to know the principle. The cases could change, but the principle stays the same. The principle you see is one's allowed to risk the chayisha, which in his case was how long? Right? He had a day or two to lie. Again, we don't poo-poo a day or two in Judaism. That's a lot of seconds of kedusha. That's a lot of seconds a person could do tshuva. It's a lot of mitzvahs a person could do. You say, what mitzvahs? He's on his deathbed. How about telling his wife he loves her, and telling his children he loves them? It's also a mitzvah. So we don't poo-poo any amount of time. And you'll tell me he's unconscious, he can't do any mitzvahs. But what about all the people who are treating him? What about his children who are coming to just take care of him? You're taking away those chasadim, those mitzvahs are infinitely valuable. So we don't poo-poo even a day or two. And yet, you're allowed to risk that. And all that it implies, psychologically, medically, spiritually, etc., for a chance, which is a human instinct, which the halacha endorses, a shot at the brass ring, a shot at chai olam, to restore what you hope will be a normal life expectancy. Just like they could do it in the lepers, just like they do it with the non-Jewish doctors, says the Shvas Yaakov, the person is allowed to have that medical procedure. Yeah. I'm going to get to it. Okay, good. Rav Yaakov Reischer. I don't want to misstate it. I think it was maybe 18th century, but it might have been earlier. I'm not sure. Believe that, or I'll look it up for next week. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah.
What do we call chayolam? What if it'll just extend it a year or two instead of?
So I hope we're going to get to that definition also. Okay, we're trying to move. I will have about 10-15 minutes left, but let's try to move. Okay, so that's the basic principle. I could have given you 10 other tshuvas going all the way to our generation, but they all make the same point. So this is not just one person's opinion, this has become the accepted halacha. And yet, as some of you are already raising issues, we haven't yet filled in the entire picture. There's still a number of other points to mention. So I want to discuss now three more points. In time permitting, I want to discuss three more points which fill in. The main point we've gotten to, which the answer is yes, a person is allowed to risk Chayisha in order for a chance at Chayolam. That point should not be lost no matter what we say in the next 15 minutes. But clearly there are some details, important details, we need to add to color and finish in this picture. Number one, we haven't said anything yet about the odds. I could give you the exact same scenario, but with wildly different odds. In other words, the odds are 10% that the surgery will be successful, or 40% the surgery will be successful. 70% surgery will be successful, but you should know there's a 3 out of 10 people will die on the table. Now that's still a pretty serious shaila, 30%. In a typical situation, a doctor would never do a procedure that was that risky. But if you tell me that, when I say typical, I'm saying that it's not to save a person's life. A person would go, when I was preparing, I told you last week for our cosmetic surgery shiur, I think I told you there was a symposium with doctors and Rav Schechter, and I heard the doctors at the time, one of this very top cosmetic surgeon was talking about if he had a risk of something over 5%, he wouldn't even do the procedure. We're talking now about saving a person's life. Obviously, you're allowed to take some risk. We just saw that. But how much risk? Does it matter? The answer maybe doesn't matter at all. Does it matter or not? We haven't seen an answer to that question yet. So there are basically, as far as I'm aware, three opinions on that question. And that source is 13, 14, I think, and 15 as well. Well, let's see. Number 13 is the Achiezer. The Achiezer is the great Reb Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, the great Gadol Hador of Lita, who died right at the onset of the Holocaust. and Vilna, the great Gadol, and Achi Ezer is discussing it. We don't have to read the whole case unless you want to see how the Achi Ezer spelled the word operation, which apparently was a Litvish word. So there the case was that without the operation, the person had only 6 months to live. 6 months to live. Source number 13, the first line. But if he has the surgery, he could live a normal life. Or he could die today. So he's not risking a day or two, now he's risking 6 months. So that's very similar to the case we began this year with. So first of all, he says, we see that's correct. How do we know it's correct? Because of the Gemara, because of the lepers. We know that's correct. He reviews the literature that you as scholars are already familiar with. But then he quotes an opinion called the Mishnas Chachamim. I don't know who the author of that is. The third line on the left side, where it's bolded. And the Mishnas Chachamim is the earliest source that discusses us. And even though the Mishnas Chachamim is also aware of the Gemara and he also knows the story of the lepers, he says, yes, but, even then it's only permitted when? Efshar, where is it? Next line? Safek Hashakul, Shiyichye, Kmo Safek Shiyamas Miyad. If the doctors say you have a 50% chance of getting off the table, but if there's anything less than a 50% chance of getting off the table, then he says you're not allowed to take the risk. But didn't we say you're allowed to risk Chayisha for Chayolam? It's a risky shear. Didn't we say that? Didn't we say that? So says the Mishnah Swamim, but we said that when? But only if 50%. You can risk Chayisha if they give you 50% odds, right? If you go to Vegas, or I don't know, where do they do that here? Lots or wherever you go, and they'll say you have 50% odds, that you can risk. Right, you're going to put your entire life savings, everything on the line, if you have at least 50%. But less than 50%, now again, he's not saying you're never going to have surgery with less than 50% chance. It depends on what the risk is. If the risk is you'll be injured, or the risk is something else, that's something else. But when the doctors are telling you that there's a 51, let alone a 60 or 70% chance that you're going to die, even though you flip it around, if you're an optimist, you say, well, you know, 35% chance I could live, 40% chance I could live. The Mishnah Chacham's opinion is nothing doing. So that's the first opinion, that's the most restrictive. He says you need at least 1 in 2 odds. 50% or better. Hold that thought and skip to number 14, the next source. 14, the next source. This is from a very important modern sefer, the Encyclopedia Hilchatit Rufuit, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's an encyclopedia of halacha medicine. It was edited and written by Rabbi Dr. Professor Avram Steinberg, one of the great, great medical ethicists of our generation. And Dr. Steinberg here quotes another opinion. He says, no, you don't need 50%, but you do need 30%. Who did he get 30%? He says in the footnote, I heard it in the name of Rav Yashiv. Rav Yashiv's opinion is, you need 30%. How do we know that? Because Rav Yashiv's son-in-law, Rav Zilberstein from Bnei Brak, who's a big expert in medical halacha, told him so. And we don't have time to get into the whole explanation of it, but I included it for you on the bottom line of source 14. But that's the second opinion. See, I'm going to put a little box here. I may have overcomplimented Landers originally. The marker's getting a little schwach. The odds of the marker making it to the rest of the shear are less than 50%. But the first opinion was you need 50%. The Yashiv apparently requires at least a 30% chance of success. And now go back to Rav Chaim Ozer, source number 13. And he disagrees with both of them. If you look on the third line in the middle of source number 13, in the middle of source number 13, the third line, we went back up. He says, even if the chance of being healed is ba'ofen rachuk, is very long odds, if there's no other way, they've given up hope other than this procedure, even though this procedure is long odds, it's allowed. He makes that even more explicit on the bottom, the last line. At all. Once we have the prognosis, nebuch, that if we don't do anything, all you have left is chayisha, just a matter of time. There's nothing else we can do. Once you're rachman al etzlan in that dire situation, said Reb Chaim Ozer, then it doesn't matter what the odds are. This is not only Reb Chaim Ozer's opinion, it was then echoed twice by the two Gedolei HaPoskim of the United States. First, if you take a look now in source number 15, in the middle of the source, you have Rav Moshe Feinstein quoting his predecessor for the unofficial title of Posek Hador in America, Rav Yosef Elio Henkin, the great Rav Henkin, who of course his grandson and granddaughter-in-law are the Rav and Rabbanit Henkin in Eretz Yisrael. But the grandfather was the great Gadol, Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin. And he also, apparently, Rav Moshe Feinstein reports, I think that's a reliable report in source number 15, where I have it underlined in the middle, Rav Henkin was also of the opinion that it is permitted no matter what the odds are. Take a look at the bottom, Rav Moshe Feinstein, who subscribes to that opinion himself. He says, the bottom of 15, Av shehu safeg rachok, even though the odds are long, it's still permitted. So basically, I would put this down as 1% or less. That's just so I can put a number here. In other words, the basic opinion is that it doesn't matter what the odds are. You're allowed to risk, again, we didn't get to the question if you're obligated or not, but you're allowed to play roulette no matter how many bullets are in the chamber. No matter what the risks are, no matter what the odds are, seems to be the majority view, in my opinion. Chaim Ozer, or Henkin, or Moshe Feinstein, all say it doesn't matter how long your odds are, you're allowed if you want to do it. Some say maybe 30%, some say even 50. It seems to me this is too restrictive. It seems to me that the mainstream, the consensus view, is that as long as there's any chance, and on the other hand, there's no chance without it, so then it is permitted. So that was an important point, number one. Number two, again, I'll tell you three last points. Number two, question was asked before, very important question. How do we define Chayisha? So I gave the example, okay, this marker is Olav HaShalom. Yes, in honor of the Mephalam. Don't throw it, just, you know, pass it up. Even though I deserve to have it thrown at me. And I got nothing from Lambda for saying that. I was just trying to pump them up, you know. So what is... This is a really good marker. I don't know why can't they buy anything so good here? Okay. Chaye Sha'a. So I gave you an example in the beginning of this year of a few months. We saw 6 months. We saw 2 days. What is Chaye Sha'a? You're allowed to risk Chaye Sha'a. Let's say a person gets a temper.
Don't say 6 months a year. Sometimes people
would. Of course. Okay, well, that's... We have to, on the one hand, I'd say we have to keep that in mind. On the other hand, just like we say, ain't ledaya and elish ain't for us. We only have what the doctor tells us. The doctors can also be wrong. They're allowed. But the point is, let's say a person has a terrible prognosis. You have 2 years to live. Now, you can't compare 2 days to 2 years. On the other hand, anyone here want to volunteer for that prognosis? It's also, on the one hand, it's a horrible prognosis. On the other hand, given the things we've been discussing, it seems a lot better than that. So here's the question. 2 years you have to live. Can you risk it all on the table today? 3 years. Where do you draw the line? At what point do we say it's no more Chaye Sha'a anymore? After all, like I said, no one lives forever. So this is a very important question which is never addressed in the Gemara or early Rishonim. It's like a major lacuna. There's just a big gap. So if you take a look in sources, look at sources 17 and 18. 17 and 18. I'll try to get back to 16 if we have the time. 17 and 18, we have a machlokas. The Darkei Tshuva, who is the Munkacher Dayan, quotes from Shlomo Kluger, and that's the Chachma Shlomo, who says, we have a principle in halacha that anything less than 12 months is called Chaye Sha'a. Now the Gemara that he's quoting was not talking about our case at all. It was talking about someone, if, Rahman al-San, you killed a person who's already dying from a terminal condition. That's usr, you can't do that. But the punishment of killing someone who was already had less than a year to live than killing someone who's completely healthy is different. That's a principle that's already on the halachic legal books. So the Darkei Tshuva, the Chachma Shlomo, said we could borrow from there and apply to here. Anything inside of a year is called Chaye Sha'a. More than a year? So then you have no right to risk it. No matter what the no matter how good the odds are, who gave you a right to risk? More Chaye Olam. More than a year is called Chaye Olam. Interesting. Rav Kook has a completely different definition, something very fascinating. Source number 18, Rav Kook says it's not about months or days or years. It's not about a certain specific amount of time. Rather, says Rav Kook, fascinating. Kol she'anu yodim she'aydei sibazu. Once we know, what do you mean we know? The doctors do their best to know. But once we know that because of this present condition, this present disease, this present reason, you're already dying. Shekoha sakana shehechala pu'ulata. We can identify the cause that has put you in the danger, that's already present. And as a result, tavo hamisa, that will lead to the death. Beinim takdim, beinim ta'acher, says Rav Kook. Then it doesn't matter, 6 months or 6 years. So it's not a matter of time anymore. Hakol b'chlal chayisha. The clock has started ticking. Imagine like the hourglass. Once you get that diagnosis, and it's not just you have nebuch, the disease, but the doctors say there's nothing we could do, it's just a matter of time. You know, turn over the clock. The sand is now going down. It doesn't matter if it's 6 days, 6 months, or 6 years, says Rav Kook. It's not about a length of time. It's about a process. You're in the process of dying. It's a harsh thing to say, but sometimes that's the truth. You're in the accelerated. You're in the express line. Right? I have no tasteful way of saying it. It is what it is. So says Rav Kook, once that has been identified and the process has started, we don't have to worry, oh, is it 13 months? I could take the surgery. Oh, but it's, you know, in Yeshivisha Games, it's 13 and a half, and I sold my other month to the guy. It's not about this. It's about a process. Once the process is present, the doctors tell us this is the cause. You will die from this or something related to it. It doesn't matter if the doctor told you 6 months or a year and 6 months. In his opinion, that was called chayisha. Two last points, and then we will conclude. What I skipped in number 16 is a very important point, and I'm sorry I skipped it, because I want to go back to it, because a few of you asked me, and it's so important. Interestingly, I didn't see anyone other than Rav Moshe Feinstein deal with this, but it's the question that you all asked, are you obligated? Until now, it was all, are you allowed? Are you obligated? Let's say a person says, I lived a good life, I'm not interested. And this is, you know, often the debate. The children and the grandchildren didn't want to do it. I'm obviously being stereotypical. There's numerous exceptions, but that's a stereotypical kind of a case. And the grandparent says, I lived my good life, I don't want any more pain, I just want to be comfortable, be with my family. Well, who said you have a right to do that? Maybe you can be saved. So says Rav Moshe, source number 16, he thinks as long as there's a 50% chance of success, then you're chayav. In other words, even though Rav Moshe had said that you're allowed, even if there's only a 1% chance, but if you get up to the 50, then Rav Moshe flips from being allowed to you have to. You have a better than 1 in 2 chance. You have a robe. You have a majority, a likelihood. You're going to be cured. And you're just going to let yourself die? Says Rav Moshe, the human initiative is required for that. You're not allowed to just sit back. Now, I'm not saying he's right. Who am I to say? But that is Rav Moshe's view. That's what he says in source number 16. Once it's more than a likelihood, a rove, then mistaber. Again, Rav Moshe doesn't have any proof. Whenever you hear a posek say, it makes sense to me, it seems to me, it's logical to me, so the one thing you know, that he doesn't have any proof. Because if he had a proof, he would say the proof is the Gemara. Mistaber, says Rav Moshe, he thinks misvara. Now, could it be that another posek would say mistaber a different thing? Could be. Who am I to judge? But that's at least something to keep in mind, Rav Moshe. Okay, now we conclude with the last and final sources, and that is the issue of pain. I'm separating that for a moment, but let's say you have somebody, Nebuch, who is in horrible chronic pain. I think in Israel, for example, where you have people, whether it was from terror or from war, you have people who Nebuch are carrying around, you know, we always talk about the fatalities after a certain incident, right? They never report the injuries. And sometimes the injury is a broken ankle and in 6 months they're fine. And sometimes a person is disfigured and Rahman Uslan in pain for life. And that's not even ignored by the press. The deaths are quoted and then forgotten. The injuries aren't even zeichet to be forgotten because they were never known. So let's say somebody is in horrible pain. The doctors have a very, very complicated procedure which they hopefully could alleviate the pain. But the procedure itself includes much, much risk. I'll give you an example. Let's say someone is paralyzed and they want to do one of these surgeries where they think they can maybe alleviate the pain, the pressure sometimes, or even give them the gift of walking. And they tell them, though, you know, maybe where they're playing around, especially if it's a quadriplegic, could be something that is itself very risky. Are you allowed to have such a procedure? Or, for that matter, especially in the time of the earlier centuries, where any act of surgery was putting your life at risk, let's say you had kidney stones, gallstones, something like that. So the procedure was to alleviate a certain pain, but you're going under the knife in those days. So this is discussed earliest by Rav Yaakov Emden in source number 19. And in source number 19, Rav Yaakov Emden, he hedges a little bit. He basically says people do it. He tells you as a fact, people have surgery even just to alleviate pain. He says it. But then he says, Kol she'ein sakana b'ke'ev, lo shapir avde. He says, it's not such a good thing that they're doing, that they're having these surgeries. After all, rabim kirvu misasana dehachituch, because the surgery itself, very often, is more dangerous than the condition was. Lefichach lo hutru legamre. How do you judge such a statement? I call it, you know, hedging. It's not completely permitted. Before he said it's not a good thing, lav shapir, then he doesn't come out and say usser usser, but he's clearly not a fan. You know who said usser usser? Ramosha Feinstein, source number 20. Says Ramosha, someone who the doctors say they could live, od kama shanim blini tuach, they don't need the surgery to live. They have years left of their life, a normal lifespan even. But without this, they have tsar, pashut lenias daiti, sha'asur lasos nituach. Again, he doesn't mean any surgery. He means a surgery which is high risk. Or, now, you'll tell me that the typical surgery, as I said to you, with a board-certified doctor and a licensed hospital and all the regular conditions that any one of us would have a procedure in, so maybe the odds of the surgery going south are only 10%. That's not high risk, necessarily. But something that's called high risk, where the only upside is pay, it's a good question. It's somewhere, I don't know. It's a good question. I would say under 10%, you're for sure okay. Once you get to 10%, that's what we already call a miyura matza. Again, that's much less than the majority. But anything where the doctors say you have a 10% or greater chance of...
prior to the surgery, it's a 50%.
That's to save your life. Here, of Moshe, you understand? That's to save your life.
But tell that to the person who's living with the head every day.
I don't want to, you. I don't want to tell him. I'll send him to Grand Street. He's still looking. He'll be wandering around looking for a Moshe. He'll forget his pain. Okay, I want to just end because I don't want to hold you longer. The bottom line is not everybody agrees. Baruch Hashem for you. Not everyone agrees, including the great sainted and late sage of Yerushalayim, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Source number 21, Dr. Abraham quotes not only an earlier Hungarian source, the Sherem Tzon of Halacha, but for even those of us who are Hungarian, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, Yitachein, the kol shenaseh kedavar kal b'nei habriyos havalei kemo shomer p'saim Hashem. Says anything which is considered a normal procedure. Again, this gets back to almost where we started. So if you tell me it's super duper risky, even then even Shlomo Zalman might not allow it.
But
I'm not sure. There might be a little daylight. If you take a look right below, in the Sherem Tzion Balacha, he says very clearly, Al Kalponim Tsar Mutter Lo Lasos Kedei Lihinat Samitzar. He doesn't give any qualifications. Rosh Shlomo Zalman, when he heard that, said it has to be. What I would say the difference is, again, this is just me interpreting Rosh Shlomo Zalman, so I could definitely be wrong. There's a difference between running off to Brazil, because on the internet you found that there's some doctor in the jungle who came up with something, which people do, and when they're desperate and their life is hanging in the balance, I'm not judging them. But when you're doing that for pain, that's different than going into Hadassah and Karim, and the doctor telling you, you know, this is a very serious procedure, and Chas V'Shalom, you should just know, I'm giving you all the warnings. You know, is that... I'm saying, no, but let's say they say it's a 20% risk. That's different. I would consider that still kal b'nei habriyos. This is still something that people do, as opposed to something that way.
Clearly, they make you sign a waiver for any surgery at all.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Anyway, Emir Tashem, I'll see you again next week.